Accession number 23213, Wheel 4.
Major Potts, Wheel 4. You were saying the radio sets were useless.
Yeah, they were. I think they most probably were ex-Burma sets. They were certainly awful. And that's all I can say about them. I had no confidence. Anyway, we then, after this operation, we came down and we moved, I think, to a place called Carrack, which was along past Mentacab on the way to Bentong, which was the sort of western side of Pahang. And it was a police station, and we were stationed in the police station, the full platoon, and a couple of tents on the lawn. Not a lot happened there. We did actually did a lot of patrols. In fact, it was very pleasant. We seemed, if I remember rightly, we played badminton most of the time. And there wasn't a lot for us to do. It was very welcome period, but we did have one nasty incident. We sent our ration truck in to Temelo, I suppose 25 miles, 30 miles, and we always sent two trucks up in Pahang, well spaced, because there were a number of ambushes. And one of our trucks, for some unknown reason, the rear truck fired off some shots. They said they saw terrorists. I doubt it. Now the front truck then did a skedaddle, came back to Carrack. And the first I knew, and I think I was in charge at the time, and I said to the other corporal, he said, "Oh, well, the other vehicle hasn't come back, and we think they've been ambushed." So I said, "Well, why the bloody hell didn't you go get out of the truck and find out what was going on?" Anyway, there was a lot of kerfuffle, and eventually it transpired that the second truck had broken down, and they had fired a couple of shots to draw attention to the fact.
To alert the
front truck. Yeah, and the chap cleared off.
He bolted.
Well, he bolted in to see the CEO, and he wasn't a corporal anymore. So that was the end of it. He wasn't a very nice chap.
How many chaps were there in the rear truck then?
I think there were three in the rear truck and about three in the front truck. You know, you can keep dissipating or reducing numbers. And then, because on that road, near where they fought, where they had where they fired the shots, I don't know if they did break down, but there you are. There had been an ambush of a bus, in a perfect ambush.
Civilian bus,
shot up. And there were also a field regiment, two trucks had been shot up, and they lost 14 killed on that bit of road. It was a perfect ambush.
Serious ambush.
Oh, yeah.
What was that bit of road like then? What made it a good ambush?
Well, it was high one side, low the other. You went in around like that. Sort of road came along. And even if you were 100 yards apart, they had a field of fire.
So you were going round a corner, high bank on one side, low bank on the other.
They were past masters of good ambushing, the communist terrorists. When we were in Pahang, there was a new police station being set up with Malays. And they had all their Bren guns and everything. They were in boxes, believe it or not. And they were ambushed and they lost a lot of police. And they lost their three Bren guns complete. Why they're in boxes, I shall never know.
Not yet unpacked.
Not unpacked, not ungreased, no nothing, you know. Now, another thing, and I can't tell you when it happened. We had south of Temelo, the railway, down as far as Gemmas. There was no road. And I think the name of the village was Meng Quang. And one night, the Chinese terrorists decided to take out the police station, which was commanded by a sergeant, a Malay sergeant, and about six or eight policemen. And there was quite a battle, because we went down the next day, and there were five or six dead Chinese around the police station, and they were all, and there was no hurt to any policeman. And this was a great morale booster to the local police force as a whole, because at that time they were being murdered and everything else. Now, somebody in their wisdom after this attack said, wherever so many communists around, they must be getting supplies. Well, they were getting supplies, because this, all this area here was squatter rice, and there were farmers. So we were ordered to go down, and we took the armored train down, and we were to collect all the rice in the area.
Harvested all?
No, it was already harvested. It was in sacks. But there was a problem. The open agricultural area was about 3 miles wide to the forest edge, jungle edge. And we started to collect the rice in. We had to give receipts to everybody for the rice we collected. Well, the first day we collected a train full of rice. Our three coaches were full. And they were very heavy. And after about the fourth day, the troops were browned off. I certainly was pretty upset about it. And my platoon commander didn't think very much of it, so we all went back to Mentacam and said, this is going to take us 2 years to get this crop in. Somebody made the idea that if we collected all that in, then we would issue it out in penny packets to the squatters. Well, it wasn't working. It was madness, whoever thought of it.
They hadn't actually measured the amount of rice.
Oh, no, there were hundreds and hundreds of tons of rice around. I also think in Pahang at that time, people, more should have been done to track along forest edge, is looking for rice, places for rice to be, where it had been stored. Exactly the same as logging camps. Those were the sort of places that the terrorists used. I have heard people said, oh, they're 20 miles in the jungle. They may well be, but they still got to get food. And I never saw a scrawny dead terrorist.
If I could go back just a moment to that ambush you said, where all the case where the two trucks were on the road.
Yeah.
What happened to the second truck, the one that had broken down?
Oh, our ones. What we thought was an ambush, and it wasn't.
Did it come in on its under its own steam?
No, we went back in the other truck and we found it. I'm not quite certain. I was so annoyed with this corporal, jeopardizing my life.
Right.
No, joking apart, I really can't. It was all a storm in a teacup. But it could have had disastrous effects. Emergencies, things change all the time. I think they fired the two shots. Something went wrong with the vehicle. The driver in those days most probably sorted it out. They were old, I think they were old American 1500 weights.
Chevrolets,
yeah. Anyway, the corporal was bust and that was it. So our next move was along this road to Ben Tong. And we operated around Ben Tong for about a month, and went on a lot of company patrols. We all went traipsing along like a lot of Boy Scouts on the way to Blackpool Beach.
Would that be then single file?
Well, single file, you know, that sort of thing.
And there would be, what, 120?
Oh, I expect we were, by the time he'd left guards behind, there would be 80 or 90.
That's a pretty long...
covering hundreds of yards.
Yeah.
And we did a couple like that, which were a complete and utter waste of time. I never actually understood why we were doing it, but mine was not to reason why. And that was the end of 1949. And just after the end of 49, we got the... we were to go back down to Selarang Barracks and re-kit and retrain. Several drafts waiting for us in Selarang Barracks. And we packed up and we took our transport and everything, and we stopped at Seremban for the night on the way south. And we drew in to Selarang. And really, it was an eye-opener. We did not realize what a scruffy-looking lot we were. We were horrible. We had been up there since June 48. And here it was, New Year 50. And...
18 months in the field.
In the field. And most of the soldiers, and I was one, the only time I ever went away from the battalion was to go to Kuala Lumpur from Karak to have a tooth out. Day to Kuala Lumpur, day to see the dentist, and a day to get back.
Was there any holiday from operation?
No, had no holidays at all.
None at all.
You might have a day when you went out on patrol and you said, what am I on today? And they say, well, admin, and you got on and you got yourself sorted out and got your rifle really clean. And but there was no holidays at all. But that, you know, that people don't believe that today.
Well, were there any facilities for recreation?
Basketball, basically, and netball. There were no football pitches. I have left out one thing. I'll go back to it now, if I may. Before we went to Bentong, we went to what was called Malay Camp, which was between Mentakab and Karak. It was a new Malay regiment camp that was being built, and we went there to protect the contractors. And we were there for, I suppose, 3 or 4 weeks. And... we patrolled around there too, but we, about that time, I didn't go on the, or did I go on the patrol? I can't remember. No, I don't think it was me. Spencer Chapman's book came out. Yeah, and Bucket Woe, I remember, was well to the fore, and Bucket Woe, and they went to Bucket Woe to look for the terrorists, and they did get a couple, the company, but I understand Spencer Chapman was asked to come out to Malaya, but he declined for obvious reasons. These were his old chums. Another thing we did in Pahang, it was about the time of my 21st birthday. We had to go and look for the commander of the Guards Brigade who crashed, aircraft crashed. We spent a week looking for him. No, we didn't find him. The aircraft was about 20 miles away and was found 20 years later, really up on the peak, crossing the spine of Malaya. It was, I remember the name of the pilot. The pilot was a chap called Churchill, and Erskine was the brigadier. And they took off just before a storm. Erskine said, I got to get back to Kuala Lumpur. And they hit the storm, and that was it. They were in. I mean, an Oster was not a very robust sort of aircraft.
No, indeed.
But we spent in the most awful country sort of searching for this aeroplane. But, I mean, he could have gone in. anywhere, and they only found an aeroplane that went in near the Hogs, near Haslemere. We've been missing for 25 years the other day. So, and that is about the end of my time on operations in Malaya.
Did you learn any lessons in particular while you were in the field in Malaya that was a general application about jungle operations or counterinsurgency?
Yeah, I think the things that I really you can wash in streams and everything, but don't use soap. You can wash your body without using soap. I can wash your mess tins in dirt and they come out clean. Always take, if you have pills to take, such as Mepocrine, make sure that the soldiers do take them at the right time. We had odd cases of malaria. You have to adapt to the country. Cooking is another problem. I believe that if you're operating in a place like Malaya, your food should be curtailed to sort of biscuits, and you carry rice, curry powder and tins of sardines, and a small brew can, and tea, and small tubes of all this business of individual ration packs that we had, and 7-man or 10-man packs. You were carrying an awful lot of weight around all the time. I remember I had one soldier, when he got his individual ration pack, he had a lot straight away. He said, I'm not taking this on patrol.
Do you think he was doing the right thing?
Well, I didn't say no. Mm. It's like smoking. You see, nowadays people don't smoke. I think the troops still do smoke. Don't smoke Chinese cigarettes if you're in China. If you're in Afghanistan, smoke Afghanistan cigarettes. But the chap who lives out in the rough can tell what sort of cigarette is being smoked. And later on I'll talk to you about its smell. I didn't know that at this time. I don't think we were particularly well supplied in Malaya with kit. Our kit was pretty poor. We had a ground sheet, which was pretty nearly useless. You could make a better basher without one than you could with one. Jungle boots didn't last. What said you call, you put ammunition in 303? No, not the pouch, the bandoliers. Bandoliers rotted. Ammunition was lost. Bound to be lost.
Just
dropping out of the bandolier. Nobody did it willingly. I think we have overcome the problem of carrying stuff now with on our backs, but we had awful old 14-18 war type large packs. I'm just thinking matchets were all right. It was just, I suppose, 50 years ago, we just didn't have the equipment that people do have now. And I think that is about the end of my story so far of Malaya. I'll go on about Singapore until we arrived in Singapore, and we had a week in which the quartermaster, who'd gone down beforehand, had sorted out everybody was getting new kit. The administration to the I thought, was not very good in the battalion. There weren't the facilities, all that sort of thing. Pay grades. Really the battalion needed a rest and sorting out.
Would it have taken to get it properly sorted out, do you think?
I think we would. I left before the battalion was still down. It had 2 or 3 weeks to run. I think we had a couple of months or 6 weeks down there. And I was given the job with a sergeant to train the two carders that had come out from England in jungle warfare in Singapore. But in those days, there was a bit of jungle still in Singapore.
How did they take to jungle?
Well, these were kids. Most of them were national service. They were full of enthusiasm, but by that time we were a bit hardened, and the jungle's a very noisy place at night. The average townie, I think he was scared witless of the noises in the jungle. We trained up around the reservoirs and out on the, I forget if it was the western side of the island, doing field firing. And I think I did a couple of weeks of this. But in between time, I'd been to see some colonel for a unit selection board. And he said, OK, you can go back to the UK and take your regular commissions board again. And well, I didn't. I took a short service commissions board when I got home. But I got on a troop ship in, I think it was end of January or February, sometime like that. And you know, it was 4 weeks home on a troop ship doing nothing, which was great fun. And I got to Southampton, went on leave.
Why were you set on taking a short service
commission? Well, I didn't think I'd get a regular commission. I thought I didn't really know the form. And in those days, there weren't many people to turn to, you know. We had several new officers who had arrived in the battalion who had come from Sandhurst. I thought were quite good chaps. I was very unimpressed with the national service type officer that we had had, but some were very good. Perhaps we'd been unlucky in my corps, because some did very, very well. So I came back to the UK, and that was it. And I went on leave, and eventually reported to the barracks down the road here.
In Exeter.
Well, they said, oh, we don't want you for training. Yeah, you can go and help run the TA. Old story. So I went along and saw the quartermaster, and then I went, and he said, oh, we're going somewhere. And about 2 days before we went, I went to my selection board. And then about 2 or 3 weeks after, I went straight on to Octia.
They test you?
I think very much the same as they still do it at Westbury today. If I remember rightly, about 30 years later, I took a squad of senior NCOs who were young senior NCOs who were potential officers. And I went to Westbury before I took them in training. And they were doing the same things at Westbury that I did when I did my selection board. And you knew exactly where you were. You did the selection board. They gave you the result straight away. You know, you had it in the last morning. They said, pass or fail. Well, I mean, I would have thought it would have been a pretty awful thing if I failed, having come all the way back from Singapore. So, I passed, and then I went to Octu. And I think if we stopped there, we could have a cup of coffee.
What, where was the Octu that you attended?
I went to Eaton Hall, Chester. In fact, it was a very good course. I enjoyed it thoroughly. It was 16 weeks.
What did you learn on the Octo? What lessons were learned stuck with you?
I think, General, how badly I've been treated, how badly the platoon commanders I'd come across in the Devons failed to recognise their obligations to their soldiers, if one believed one's instructors at Eaton Hall. And as I met several of them in years later when they were either further along the line, I enjoyed Eaton Hall. I thought it was good training, robust, we were fit, and we didn't waste time. And they got rid of, what I would consider to be unnecessary training, just for the sake of it. We did weapon training, tactics, support arms, battle camp, quite a lot of drill, but that was the guard's influence, with a guard's adjunct, as far as I remember.
The basis of discipline.
Do you think
that's true?
Oh, I think so, yes. I do. I think you've got to have discipline. If you don't have the discipline from the square, and you don't have immediate orders carried out, then you're on a sticky wicket, in my opinion.
How did the training at Eaton Hall compare with the Octo you'd been to earlier on?
Oh, Mons. I mean, Mons was appalling, I thought. I'd lost interest by the time I'd started, really, because I didn't want to go
into a corps.
And so, therefore, I could see a light at the end of the tunnel, but I never saw the light in any tunnel at Mons.
Was it a different syllabus of training then?
Oh yeah, completely. Yeah, it was. I think perhaps Mons was more realistic. They were producing actually platoon commanders. Mind you, Malaya was going. Korea had just started. We had had trouble in Somaliland. We'd had trouble in Greece. Half of platoon commanders were going to go onto active service after 16 weeks at Eaton Hall.
Did it prepare you well to be an effective platoon commander?
Yes, it did. Yes, I'm not certain that things like military law at that stage were very relevant, because at that level it became military law is, at my level when I was a platoon commander, was carried out by my company commander and the company sergeant major.
Would you say there was more emphasis on leadership than on command?
Yes, we didn't get lost on command, i.e. we never went above talking about battalions. We talked about platoons and companies the majority of the time. And this was, in my opinion, quite right, because that is where your life was going to be, and the majority of the people at Eaton Hall at that time were National Service. And it had obviously been sharpened up from what it had been, say, 2 years before I got there.
And if we could talk about choice of regiment, how was that done, the selection of particular regiments? Did you have any say in that?
That is a very good question.